we start off today to close your eyes for a moment if you're comfortable. And I want you to think about a difficult homeschool circumstance that you've had in the last few days. Like, maybe you don't have to think back even a few days. I know how it is. The last 5 minutes, whatever. Last of your own. Anyway, I want you to think back about a difficult circumstance that you were having. And I want you, if you can, to get in touch with that voice in your head and what is it saying to you. Honestly, for me, for a long time, that voice was really unconscious and I didn't recognize it because it just happened all the time unconsciously. What is that voice saying to you? Okay, if you had to name that voice, would you call it a critic? Would you call it a friend? Or would you call it a coach?
Critic.
Guess what? We're all in really good company. I feel like, and this probably goes for men too, but I feel like women especially are really mean to themselves. We can really, really beat ourselves up. And so that's part of what this class is about. Hi, my friend Lacey. How are you? Not to put you on the spot as you're coming in.
I'm her friend.
Yes. Okay. So we talk a lot about relationships and like building relationships with our children and relationships with God. But we don't always talk about the importance of building of what I actually think is the most important relationship, and that is the relationship that we have with ourselves, because we are with ourselves 24/7, right? We can't get away from ourselves. That head and what's going on in our brains is always, always with us. There's no way to escape our own company, and I truly believe that we can't have healthy relationships with other people unless we have a healthy relationship with ourselves. So most problems aren't really relationship problems, they're self-concept problems. And I believe that when our self-concept aligns with God's truth of who we are, everything changes. Our capacity to love, our capacity to serve and connect with others grow. And I also want to invite you to believe this thought today, or at least to try it on and to be open to the possibility that it's right. True self-love isn't selfish. It's actually humble. And when we are whole within, then we have the ability to lift everyone around us. I love this quote. Perhaps the most important thing you can do to build relationships with others is to strengthen your relationship with yourself and with God. So before we go any further, I want to invite you to increase your awareness. We're going to do a quick self-check to see what's happening with your inner relationship right now. Most of us don't realize how we're treating ourselves. We just see the results. So maybe we're a little grumpy or irritable, or we're snapping faster at the people around us, right? Or we feel this constant pressure to push through and just finish the lessons and get through whatever it is. It's like this test of our endurance. Maybe we are feeling some resentment over all of the needs that people have, and their needs are being met, but ours aren't. Or maybe by the end of the day, you're exhausted and you're worn out and you're collapsing and you're just done. So I kind of mentioned this, but the way that we treat ourselves spills over into every other relationship. So we are going to do a little awareness assessment exercise. It's not really a test, but I just want you to gain some awareness of where you're at. I'm going to show you a test here, or a little assessment, and I don't want you to think too long about it. I want you to just go with your gut reaction, and you're going to read through each of these And I want you to give yourself a score from 1 to 10, 1 being rarely or never and 10 being almost or always. And then you're going to add those numbers together and so you can get a possibility of 50. And I want you to answer honestly because there is no gold star for getting the most, the highest number. Okay, we're trying to increase our awareness. Can everybody see this or do I need to read it out loud? Will you raise your hand if you can't see it and I will be happy to read it out loud. Okay, I will let you go ahead and read it on your own, but just give you a couple minutes to look at it and assess, to evaluate where you're at. It's 1 through 5. I tried to make it simple. There's only 5. So.
But then you score yourself.
Score yourself 1 through 10. Oh, yes. Sorry. There's some confusion. So there's a possibility of 50. Mm-hmm. Confused. Sorry, honey. You're just fine. I love that we have some dads in here, by the way. I don't know if you're in here for your wives to support them or if you're feeling like you need to take care of yourself as well. Either way, welcome. To do now before I move to the next slide is I want you to circle your lowest number. Okay, and that is going to give you some information, a clue, because usually your lowest, your most struggling area is where your that inner relationship with yourself kind of leaks out on everybody else, where you feel the most depleted, maybe the most reactive, where you're more likely to spiral. And then here is the scoring. I'll let you look at that for a second. Okay, so keep that in mind as we go throughout the rest of this presentation. Okay, I want to give you a definition of self-love. Self-love is agreeing with God about your worth. I think sometimes we confuse being hard on ourselves with being humble, but I believe that real humility and real self-love is accepting God's truth about who we are. I think that sometimes we think of pride as arrogance and thinking that we're better than other people, and that is a version of pride, but pride can also look the opposite, where we're comparing from the bottom looking up and thinking that we are not enough. Either way, it's self-focused. But shame is not proof of humility or selflessness. It's an attack on our true identity. And I'm going to say that again because that's really important, I think, for each of us to understand, that shame is an attack on your true identity. It doesn't lead us to God, it pulls us away from Him. So Henry J.M. Nouwen said, self-rejection is the greatest enemy of the spiritual life because it contradicts the sacred voice that calls us the beloved. So I brought a mirror. I don't know that you can see what is on this mirror, but it has two sides. It's a two-sided mirror. On one side it says, I'm better than. On the other side, it says, I'm worse than. Okay, so there's the pride of superiority And then there's the pride of inferiority. And both are rooted in comparison. And both are focused on ourselves. And a focus on how I rank, how I compare. John Piper said this: boasting is the response of pride to success. Self-pity is the response of pride to suffering. And then President Ezra Taft Benson said, most of us consider pride to be a sin of those on the top, such as the rich and the learned, looking down at the rest of us. There is, however, a far more common ailment among us, and that is pride from the bottom looking up. Self-contempt is not humility. Humility is saying that God is right about who he is and about who I am. So feeling unworthy can actually be pride just dressed up in as a counterfeit humility. So I would invite each of you, rather than to have the mirror that you're looking into, to turn this mirror into a window to look through to God, to see his love, his perfect love for you. What does God say is true about you? Because self-love is not self-worship. It is agreeing with God about your worth. And when that mirror turns into a window, something else happens. I stop staring at myself, for better or worse, and I can finally see his perspective and his love clearly. And when I see his love, I can live differently. Not striving for worth from a place of worth. And that makes all the difference. When we're striving from a place of worth rather than striving for our worth, that right there is the key to changing everything for our homeschools and truly fueling ourselves. Christ taught, let your light so shine. He is the light, and as we live true to the light and true to who he created us to be, we reflect him. And when we reflect him, we give others permission to do the same. So if you find yourself, like I said at the beginning, being resentful or yelling or pushing through and feeling overwhelmed or trying to get things done just to check a box, it's not because you're a bad mom, but it is because you are coming from a place of depletion and you're talking to yourself like you're the enemy. Oh, I forgot to show you that slide. Here's the mirror turning into the window. Okay. I love this scripture in Matthew 22:37-39. I'm sure it's familiar to most of us. But Jesus said unto him, I'm going to read my slide because it's hard to read my paper. Jesus said unto him, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. So whenever I have read this scripture, or whenever we've studied it in church, there seems to be a focus on the first two parts of this, that we should love God and that we should love our neighbors, right? And absolutely, they are the greatest commandment. But when I was reading this recently, it dawned on me that Jesus is using as the standard to love God and to love neighbors. He's saying to do that as you love yourself. And I had never really thought about it that way, that loving ourselves is the standard, is kind of the benchmark for loving everybody else, right? He's making an assumption that we already love ourselves, so now we need to love God and love our neighbor. And I think that here's the surprising truth. When we love others, it feels amazing to us. Love is one of the best feelings God gives his children. But when we are stuck in self-loathing and judgment, it's so much harder to extend genuine love to anyone else. Healing, even in other relationships, begins with healing the way we relate to ourselves. I thought it was interesting as I was preparing for this presentation. I don't have the time to go through all of the research that I read. But I can tell you that the research consistently shows that self-compassion is linked to greater generosity and pro-social behavior, which I think is really interesting. It's the whole kind of oxygen mask analogy that we've all heard a million times, right? That we have to put our own oxygen mask on before we can put it on someone else. Okay, so I'm going to ask a question, and I want you to answer this from more of a worldly perspective, not based on what I've been sharing today. But when I say self-care, what pops into your head? Like when you hear the word self-care. Just blurt it out.
The things I see on Instagram.
The things you see on Instagram, such as?
The bubble bath.
A bubble bath. The face mask. What else?
Get your fancy drink.
Get your fancy drink. Get a massage.
Get your nails done.
Get your nails done. Somebody said something.
Being alone.
Being alone. I don't know who's saying what. Yes, exactly. Any other ones that stand out to you? Okay, so yeah, I totally agree. Okay, so yes, taking a nap, eating a chocolate cake, taking a bubble bath, right? Those are all the things that we think of when we think of self-care. And obviously some of those things can be pleasant, right? And not all bad, right? But here's the shift that I would like to invite you to make in your thinking today. True self-care is not an escape from your life. It's how you sustain your life. Self-care is stewardship. God gave us a body, a mind, a nervous system, a spirit, and he didn't ask you to grind them into the dust to prove that you are faithful. He asked you to abide in him and to live with wisdom. So here is the definition of self-care that I invite you to take on. Self-care is the intentional practice of nurturing your physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual well-being so you can show up as the healthiest, most grounded version of yourself. Okay, and here is how you can tell the difference between real self-care and fake self-care. Sometimes we think that caring for ourselves sometimes we try to care for ourselves by actually just avoiding our life, by avoiding our emotions, by scrolling on Instagram, by, you know, whatever it is, by eating. One of my personal favorites is staying busy. Okay? So I don't have to feel. This is what is termed, at least in the coaching world, as buffering. Okay? So it's you're avoiding your emotions and you're trying to escape your life, so you do these things to escape your life. So I'd like to invite you to just take a moment and write down something that you do to escape, to avoid your life. And we all do it. There's no shame here because we're human. Just to help you become more aware. So that thing might help you escape right now. It might soothe your present self, but typically it costs your future self. It isn't love. It isn't true relief or restoration. It is just an escape from whatever is stressful at this moment. So real self-love honors your past, strengthens your present, and it invests in your future. So in the moment when you are feeling that resentment or the overwhelm or you're feeling depleted, I want you to ask yourself this question. What would true self-love do here? Not the escaping my life kind of self-care that we sometimes think is self-care, but true self-care. What would self-love do here? Okay, sometimes it might look like taking a nap. Sometimes it might look like going outside and just connecting with nature for a minute. Sometimes it might be saying a silent prayer and taking a deep breath. I have been doing a lot of work, personal work on myself the last few years and have learned a lot of really incredible, amazing tools that have really transformed my life. And one of the things that I have become aware of in my own life is that I thought that even taking care of myself was just one more thing I needed to do on my to-do list. And it felt like pressure, like, oh, I need to be exercising an hour every day, and I need to whatever it is. And I added it to my to-do list, and it caused me more stress and more pressure. And one of the things that I'm realizing now is it is being present in the moment. It really doesn't take that much exercise and movement for us to be healthy individuals. Like, it's running around the block a couple times when I have a minute. It is taking microseconds during the day to just connect with myself and to connect with God and to connect with the people I love. It is walking outside and just enjoying the sunshine. It's taking 5 minutes to sit down at the piano and play a piece for a minute, something that really, really feeds my soul. It's not adding more and more pressure upon ourselves to do more and more. It's just taking those moments. And sometimes we don't feel like we have those moments and we don't have time for those moments, but that is what truly replenishes us. I've been taking an advanced nervous system certification course this year, and the things that our nervous system needs to be strong and to function and whatever are those little micro moments, like taking deep breaths. That's what keeps us resilient and strong. Okay. I want to talk for a minute about, I kind of mentioned this, but I want to talk for a minute about what fuel are you serving from? Because again, the way we treat ourselves doesn't stay private. It spills into every relationship we have, and the way we fuel ourselves determines the way we pour into others. Okay. So, am I serving from brokenness or from wholeness? And that's the key to all of this. So, I have these pictures of these pictures. That's a mouthful. And one represents serving from brokenness, from maybe fear, from people-pleasing, or needing approval. And if you serve from that, you are going to feel depleted. You are going to run dry quickly. But picture number two represents serving from wholeness, from love, from safety, from knowing your worth in Jesus Christ. The pouring out is sustainable because you, the source, keeps replenishing you. So I want to share a few concrete examples of what it looks like to share from brokenness versus wholeness. Okay? So hopefully you can all relate with these examples. I want you to picture that. someone from church, or maybe from your co-op or your commonwealth, whatever you're involved with, asks you to take on some kind of an assignment. Okay? And I'm sure we've all been there, right? And your gut reaction, your whole body is screaming, no, I cannot do one more thing. And what comes out of your mouth is, sure! I don't think I'm the only one that has had that problem my whole life. But okay, so, and maybe like unconsciously I'm thinking, if I don't do it, who else will? Or if I don't do it, they'll be disappointed, or, you know, whatever it is, okay? But then we do it, and somewhere in the process, where we end up resentful, or we end up exhausted, or like, why the heck did I agree to do this, right? So that is serving from a place of brokenness. That's serving from a place of duty, or maybe trying to earn approval. So instead, I'll give you an example of serving from wholeness. So this time, the same request, and this time I pause and I check in with myself and I check in with Heavenly Father, or better yet, this is what I do now, is I don't answer anymore in the moment. I give myself time because I just know I'm a people pleaser and I just want to say yes to everything. So now I'll be like, let me think about it and let me get back to you, so that I really can take time to decide if it is the right decision for me, okay? Either way, so you stop and you're trying to partner with God and you're trying to take care of yourself before you answer. And you come to the decision that actually, no, this is not a good fit for me. And so you tell the truth and you say it kindly and you tell them that you support what they're doing, but now is not a good time for you. And you trust that if this is important, it will be figured out, that God is a God of abundance and someone else it will be a great fit for, or maybe it's not important that it needs done, whatever. But we're not serving from that place of depletion or earning love or duty, okay? Okay, I'm going to give you a couple more examples, I think. I wish there was a clock in here.
What time? We've got 18 minutes.
Okay, I'm good. Yeah, thank you. Okay, here's another example. So your child is melting down over math. I'm sure none of you have ever had this happen, ever. And this is serving for brokenness, maybe from a sense of control or perfectionism, okay? So the voice in my head, in my mom head, says, we're behind, and a good mom would have had this figured out by now. Nobody else's children throws fits or melts down over math. I've seen the Instagram pictures. Everybody else's children are happy doing that, right? Okay, so we start comparing. We start, whatever, judging ourselves, making this circumstance, which is normal for every human mother ever, we start making it mean something about who we are and our child's failure and all the things, right? Especially if our nervous system is dysregulated, it's really easy to, to just spiral. So what we do is we push to finish the lesson anyway, and everyone ends up in tears, and the math doesn't really get done, and I feel like a failure, and our child is screaming in the other room. Right. Okay. Now, instead, let's approach that same circumstance from a place of wholeness, from a place of confidence and knowing that just this circumstance is happening doesn't necessarily mean anything about my child or my worth. It's just a moment in time that we all have, part of the human experience. So it's the same math meltdown, but instead you show a little compassion for yourself. Like, this is hard, but guess what? My worth and my child's worth are not measured in math pages. I notice my stress. I take a deep breath. I maybe give my child a hug. I maybe give them a break to run around outside for a second so that they can calm down and we can work on the math. But when it comes down to it, the relationship matters most. And I know that from a place of wholeness more than getting the math done. Okay, one more example. Okay, here's an example of serving from brokenness, a fear of rejection, self-sacrifice as your identity instead of wholeness. So a friend texts in crisis, and I immediately rearrange my whole day, even though I'm already fried. So my inner script is, if I'm not always available, I'm a bad friend, and I can't let her down. This is serious. So I go ahead and help, but at the end of the day, I feel drained, and I secretly feel resentful. Okay, so that is serving from that place of brokenness. Okay, here's another example, serving from wholeness, sorry. So same friend, same text, but I check in with God about my capacity, and I ask, is this where I need to show up today? And guess what? The answer is yes, I do need to. So because I've now checked in with God and I know that He needs me to serve this friend, I know that somehow it's going to be okay with my family. They're obviously going to be left to their own devices or whatever. I have to make arrangements for them, but I know that this friend needs me. But I also feel God's strength and His power and His love with me to go serve that friend. And the experience at the end of the day is very different because I know I went where God needed me. And we can't do all the things that we want to in a day, right? It's not possible. But when we're listening to God's voice and we're serving out of that place of wholeness, the result is completely different than when we do it from a place of I have to, or I'm supposed to, or she doesn't have anybody else. Okay? When we know, when we're checking in with ourselves and we're listening to God's voice. Okay. So I want to give you just a moment to write down, what is one place I've been serving from brokenness? And what would serving from wholeness look like in this same situation? I'm going to give you a couple minutes to write that down. So, if wholeness is the best gift that you can give your children, how do you actually build it? How do you build that wholeness? So, I want to give you four areas that we can work on, how to truly love yourself. Okay, the first is quiet the inner critic. Most, if not all of you at the beginning, said that that voice inside your head was pretty mean during that stressful moment in your homeschool. Okay. So our brains are naturally wired to be negative, to be scanning for what might be out there that's dangerous or might hurt us. So we're naturally wired to have a negative bias, okay? What that means, though, is that most of us, if not all of us, have that inner critic dialogue running on autopilot, and we don't even notice how harsh it is because it's become unconscious. But whatever we are believing is what we are creating in our life. Our limiting beliefs become self-fulfilling. So I want to invite you to start noticing your self-talk. The things that we say to ourselves, we would never say to someone that we love dearly. Maybe in our worst moment we would. but we talk to ourselves that way all day, every day, right? But we wouldn't say that to our best friend. We would never talk that way to our best friend. I think that we are all, I think part of the human experience is we are all chasing approval, but what we really want is self-approval. What we want is our own approval. And I think that we usually are looking for it outside of ourselves when we haven't given it to ourselves. So that's a really big one. Okay, the next one is be your own best friend. I love these quotes, so I'll put them both up here. Patricia Holland said, be more caring for yourself and as kind to yourself as you would be to a friend in need. You are in need, and you ought to be your own best friend. And then in the booklet for missionaries, the Church of Jesus Christ teaches, be kind to yourself. Talk to yourself with the same kind, comforting words you would use with someone else. So, I want you to think for a second one of your very closest, dearest friends that you feel like you can be the yourself the most around. What kinds of things make them such a good friend? What kinds of things do they do? Who said that? I can hear. Thank you. Listening without an agenda. I love that. Listening is so important, right? I know for me, my friends that listen, I can celebrate the things that are happy without worrying that they're judging me and thinking that saying I'm better than or whatever, right? So I can share the things that I'm really excited about, but I can also share things that are really vulnerable and hard, and they leave space for both, right? But do we do that for ourselves? Do we listen to ourselves and offer ourselves compassion when we're having a hard day or celebrate something exciting? Or do we just brush it off, right? So I want you to think about that and do exactly what Lacey said, to listen without an agenda. I love that. What else do your friends do that you appreciate?
No judgment, but still push you to be better. Like,
yes.
At the same time, they want you to be better, but they're not going to judge what you made a decision on, I guess.
Love that. And I especially love that because they are encouraging you. There's no judgment. And from that place of no judgment, they can encourage you, and you actually want to be better. We sometimes think that self-loathing and beating ourselves up, whatever, are going to be the thing that motivates us to do great things, and guess what? It doesn't at all, right? Yeah. We can get ourselves to do it for a while. We can, you know, grit our teeth, and we have a certain measure of, you know, grittiness, but it only lasts for so long. But if we can fuel ourselves with, you got this, and it's okay, you're human, and show that self-compassion like a good friend would, and encourage ourselves, that's huge, right? I love that. What were you going to say?
That's what I was
going to
say.
You were going to say the same thing. Great minds think alike. Yes.
So I live far away from all my friends. So to have
bummer.
But I live 20 miles from a stoplight. And so for when a friend actually will drive to my house or to call me, I know I have a friend. You know, intentional.
Yeah.
Carrying them.
Thank you. That's so beautiful. So what does that look like in your life? Or friendship with yourself. Right.
But I've also learned I have to be intentional. If I want relationships, I have to plan, and I have to show up. You know.
Thank you.
I drive all the time. But you know, have it turn back.
Yeah. And for people to have a friendship with you and for you to have a friendship with other people, you have to be intentional and you have to take the time, right? Mm-hmm. So do we do that for ourselves? Are we intentional about having a relationship with ourselves? Do we take the time to figure ourselves out and just ask, what do you need right now, right?
Or just say hi.
Yeah, like, hi, how are you doing, right? Right? Okay. Let's move on to the last, because I've got 5 minutes. Okay. Oh. See, you guys already did this. Listen, stand up for yourself, cheer for yourself. Okay, we're going to go into number three. Get to know yourself. Okay, this one is really important, too. Many of us have been so conditioned to people please and to serve and to think about everybody else's needs than our own that we have pretty much lost touch of what our own needs are, or even our own wants, or what we like to do, right? We don't even, at least that's how I feel. Maybe there's some of you who still know what you're passionate about. And it's not like I don't know it all, or I didn't know it all. But there was a period of time in my life where my husband would be like, so what do you want to do? And I'm like, I don't even know. What do I even like to do? I don't even know anymore, right? So we need to take intentional time to get to know ourselves. Some of the ways that have been that have really blessed me are being still, meditating, walking, just turning off things. Like I like to get things done, and I like to always be learning. So I have this habit of always listening to a podcast or a book or whatever. But it's important to just turn things off sometimes and to listen and to be still. That's so important. The other thing that has been super beneficial for me is journaling. I've made a practice that most nights before I go to bed, I just take a few minutes and I journal and I write down my thoughts. And I use that time to process. And I have discovered so many things about myself and the way that I work that have led to my happiness. So that's another really great one. Check in with your body. Like, we don't do that. We just run on autopilot and keep pushing and pushing. And then all of a sudden, you know, after weeks on end, we're in bed exhausted or whatever. At least that was my pattern. I would push and push, and then I'd be like, I can't go anymore. I didn't even realize I was having an issue, you know. Then I'd sleep for 2 days, and then I'd do it again. So thankfully, I have broken that pattern. But I think a lot of moms do that. We just push and push and push, and we don't realize that our body just needs those short moments of rest, or we need actual sleep at night, or we need fuel for our bodies. We need to eat breakfast, whatever it is. And then this one, mirror talk. I think we were talking somewhere about, like, saying hi to yourself, okay? This is what mirror talk is. It's looking at yourself and just being present with yourself in the mirror, looking into your eyes and telling yourself, hi, how are you? I love you. What do you need from me today? Or maybe you're having a hard day and you just want to talk to yourself and show some self-compassion. And when I first started doing this, I thought it was really awkward and weird. It felt, I don't know, like just awkward. But it builds a relationship with yourself. Okay, and then last, accept all of you. I put this code up here for those of you who walked in late. There's a detailed handout if you want it, by the way. Okay, so accept all of you. This quote here, develop self-compassion, accept and love yourself, including your imperfections. Okay, the goal is not perfection in this life. Okay, the goal is growth and becoming. And so accepting all of you means to look at yourself with compassion. And it is exactly what you said. I love what you said. It is seeing that, yeah, you've got flaws. We all do, but not judging yourself. Noticing it and then encouraging yourself to do better, right? I don't remember if I... Nope, I didn't. Okay, I thought there was another thing on there. Again, because growth, true growth, comes from that self-love, not self-loathing and beating ourselves up. I can't stress that enough. So I'm going to close now, but I just want you to remember the main truth that I've hopefully come back enough times over and over throughout this presentation that you will hopefully take it on as your identity. That self-love is agreeing with God about your worth. Not because you've earned it, not because your homeschool is impressive, not because you're finally doing it right, but because you are His. And I want to make you a promise. That when you choose this kind of self-love, the kind that refuses self-rejection and agrees with God about your identity, you invite heaven's power into your everyday life. You will hear a different voice inside of you. You will become steadier, softer, more grounded, and you'll find you have more capacity to love your children, not because they're easier, but because you're no longer pouring from depletion and self-criticism. I testify that Jesus Christ is the source of that wholeness, and He doesn't just command us to love. He heals what keeps us from receiving love. And as we turn the mirror into a window and see ourselves through His eyes, we become freer to love the people in front of us. And I say that in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.